Welcome to Divided, where each week we dive into controversial issues of the 21st century. This is your host, Reem Hayek. This week's topic, Palestine and Israel. As a Palestinian American, it was very important for me to start this podcast off with a topic that I was familiar with. My parents emigrated here from Palestine in the late 1990s, and although I was born here, I had the opportunity to go back to Palestine and to see the beautiful country. I was very shocked with a lot of the situations I encountered. I didn't really understand what was happening, so this podcast is also a way for me to understand the events of the past that still help shape the present. But before we get started, here's a word from our sponsors. This podcast was brought to you by the Beit Sahur USA group. You can find them on Facebook under Beit Sahur USA. This group was created to unite Palestinians all across the United States of America, all from the same small town of Beit Sahur. They were brought together to pass on the culture of Palestine onto their children who were born here. As a first-generation Arab American, I learned much about my culture and heritage through this group. You can donate or learn more about us on Facebook at Beit Sahur USA. In order to understand the full history of Palestine and Israel, we need to start all the way back in the 1700s, the late 1700s, 1799 to be exact. During this time, Palestine was under the Ottoman Empire. This was also during the age of Napoleon. Napoleon wanted to create a presence in the Middle East and to defeat the Ottomans. In search of allies, he offers Palestine as a homeland for Jews in order to secure their uprising against the Ottomans and to cause a revolt, overthrow them. However, this didn't happen, but the idea of a Jewish state in Palestine was born from Napoleon. In 1840, this idea was brought back when Britain wanted to limit the rising power of Egypt. He wanted to open Palestine for the immigration of Jews. At this time, there was only about 3,000 Jews in Palestine. However, Jewish immigration to Palestine only continued to grow through sponsors and benefactors who sponsored these Jews to go. This led to the first creation of a Zionist settlement in Palestine in 1882. This led to the creation of the term Zionist, which means the establishment of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Many of the Jews who were originally from the Palestinian area opposed these settlements. Palestine was already settled by the Palestinian people and this country belonged to them. It was the Jews that had been coming from Europe who wanted to build a Jewish state. In 1897, they created the first Zionist Congress. It created a program for the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine. This gained British support in 1907, and they had set up a strategy toward the Muslim Arab community in the area of Palestine. They wanted to create a buffer state here. They wanted the state to be hostile to its Arab neighbors and friendly to Europe. The purpose of this was to divide up the region and to split up its power. This would ensure Britain's continued imperial dominance. Britain got its wish in 1916 when Britain seized Jerusalem, Palestine from the Ottoman Turkish Empire. player in World War I. Britain and France would divide up the Middle East later that year, and as Britain had promised Jews a homeland on Arab land, they gave Palestine to the Jews. Britain had no moral, political, or legal right to promise the land that belonged to the Palestinians to another people. This declaration was immoral and illegal. This land was not theirs for them to give away. Around this time, there were only about 50,000 Jews and over 500,000 Arabs in Palestine. In 1918, U.S. President Woodrow Wilson committed an investigation in the area of Palestine. The result was that 9/10 of the population were against the Zionist movement. The U.S. felt that a strong sense of injustice had been committed and they wanted to limit Jewish immigration. The U.S. said that an idea of a Jewish state in Palestine should be given up. However, in 1922, the League of Nations approves the British mandate for establishing a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Britain made it possible for the Jews to mass migrate into Palestine and take land. Any unclaimed or neglected properties or anything that had been owned by the government were given to the Zionist movement to build settlements. As Jewish immigration continued to increase into Palestine under the new British mandate, Palestinians began to form retaliation groups against the Zionist settlement. Farmers were being expelled from their farmlands, and what became known as El Nakba began. El Nakba translates to the catastrophe. It signifies the expulsion of Palestinian citizens from their land. And by 1925, 33,000 Jews had emigrated to Palestine and 13 new Jewish settlements were built. Palestinians continued to strike and protest, and finally, in 1928, the tension had boiled over and El Burak uprising takes place, which was the first mass protest and violent protest against Jewish immigration. In 1936, one of the biggest protests in Palestinian history broke out in the city of Jaffa. The British were turning a blind eye to illegal Zionist settlements and the Palestinians retaliated in a protest. The entire state of Palestine went on strike for 6 months. The British were so shocked by this revolution that they arrested anyone who they thought was involved and destroyed their homes. They would set up checkpoints on the street and would harass Palestinians. Some were beaten to the point of death, and many were imprisoned just for suspicion of revolution. In 1937, the Peel Commission met to put an end to this protest. They recommended the partition of the state of Palestine. The proposal would give Jews 1/3 of Palestine and Arabs 2/3 of Palestine, and Jerusalem would be under British rule. They wanted to relocate the Palestinians from the land that would be promised to the Jews to Jordan. The Zionists supported this proposal because it validated their method of transferring people out of an area based on their nationality or religion. This could result in a 100% Jewish state. Palestinians rejected this proposal, and by 1938, the Palestinian Revolution continued on. Finally, by 1939, the three-year Palestinian Revolt had ended. In an effort to bring an end to the Palestinian Revolution, Britain claimed martial law and disbanded the Palestinian forces and went village by village seizing every gun and weapon they could find. They then equipped the special Jewish forces to defend the Zionist settlements and trained their military groups. Britain then outcast any remaining Palestinian leaders, leaving the Palestinians with no political or military government. Revolts still continued on despite no leadership, and this in turn caused the British to become very violent. They burned fields and homes and tortured Palestinians in order to diminish their spirit. They also created detention centers where they would jail thousands of Palestinians just for suspicion of being involved in a revolt. The result was that over 6,000 Palestinians had been killed or wounded, while only 100 British soldiers and 400 Jews had died. Britain then held a conference in London to discuss the partition of Palestine. Nothing was achieved, and eventually World War II broke out. The Jewish Haganah military group were trained by the British to fight in the war. This group would then later form the Israeli army. And finally, Britain imposed a limitation on Jewish immigration. In 1942, the relationship between the U.S. and Israel strengthened. U.S. emerged from World War II as a leader of the Western world, and President Truman would then recommend the immigration of 100,000 displaced Jews to Palestine. Jews began to resent British rule because of the limitation on Jewish immigration, so they began to launch attacks on the British. There was over 500 attacks. These attacks would lead to the decision of Britain ending its mandate in Palestine. They were going to wash their hands clean of the mess that they had created in the first place, and they would pass the situation over to the UN. This time period would signify the beginning of an act that is considered an ethnic cleansing. This is a very critical time period in Palestinian history. Without a British force in the country, Palestinians scrambled to create military groups to defend themselves, but they simply did not have the resources and they were just way too outnumbered. The British had left all of its tanks, guns, and equipment to Israeli groups, and Jewish forces began to become more and more harsh towards Palestinians. Ben Gurion, a future Israeli prime minister, gave clear instructions to his armies. He told them to cleanse and expel as many Arabs as you can. Jewish forces began to seize more and more Palestinians' lands, and they began with 5 cities on the coast. These cities fell with no military or government to defend them. 400,000 Palestinians were forced to flee their homes, and those who tried to stay were killed in demonstrations or imprisoned. Israel begins to settle west of Jerusalem, even though it is an international region. Stern Gang and Ergun forces massacre Palestinians near the city of Jerusalem. There are now over 700,000 Palestinian refugees. The UN states Resolution 194 allowing Palestinian refugees to return back to their homes, but Jewish forces ignored these calls. A Swedish mediator was sent by the UN to achieve peace. He witnessed the horrid living conditions of the refugees and advocated for Palestinians to return to their homes. The day after his UN report, he was ambushed by Jewish Stern Gang and executed. In May of 1948, the state of Israel is created and it is immediately recognized by the US and Soviet Union. The creation of the State of Israel sparked conflict between the surrounding Arab countries. It launched the first Arab-Israeli war. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia all launched attacks on Jewish states and settlements. Their goal was to prevent the establishment of a Jewish state and to help liberate Palestine. However, their army was small and unprepared. There were scarce resources and they weren't unified. 150,000 Palestinians remained within these new borders of Israel. Al-Nakba and everything to do with the expulsion of Palestinians from their land is classified as top secret in Israel. You can't access any files towards the refugees and any negotiations for their land. Israel will not allow the release of any of these documents. In 1949, with a call for peace, Egypt, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria agreed to a formal armistice lines. Israel was given more land as a result, and the remaining parts of Palestine were split into 2 parts, the West Bank, which was to be annexed by Jordan, and the Gaza Strip, which would be under Egyptian rule. During this one-year war, 400 villages and 17 Palestinian cities had been destroyed. 13,000 Palestinians had been killed and over 30,000 injured. Israel was admitted into the UN, and Israel began to erase Palestine from history. The Israeli Prime Minister said, "Wipe away all traces in Palestine and replace Palestinian names with Hebrew ones." Within a year, the word Palestine was replaced from history, politics, and economics. For the next 19 years, the West Bank and Gaza Strip continued to shrink from illegal Israeli settlements. Israel took over 78% of historic Palestine rather than the agreed 53%. In 1964, the Palestinian Liberation Organization was formed, also known as the PLO. This was the closest thing that Palestinians had to a government in years. In 1967, Israel attacked Egypt, Jordan, and Syria in order to gain occupation over the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. They wanted to begin building many settlements in each territory. The UN called on Israel to withdraw from these territories, but they refused. Israel treated the West Bank and the Gaza Strip as if they were 2 different territories. Residents in each territory had different IDs and different permits. They were not allowed to enter the other territory without permit from Israel, which was hardly ever granted. Their purpose behind this was to separate the Palestinians and to weaken their forces. Israel began to implant many checkpoints onto the West Bank and the Gaza Strip to limit the movement of the Palestinians. You weren't allowed to travel unless you received a special permit from Israel. They even went as far as banning the Palestinian flag. In 1907, Israel declared many areas under their occupation a military zone. This prevents Palestinian people from building or even repairing their homes in the area. They did this to encourage them to leave the area so that they could build settlements in their spots. Israel also gained control of the Jordan Valley, which controls all of the water sources for the West Bank. With this ability, they are able to deny water to many areas. This imposes a great problem as many Palestinians are farmers. Without lots of water, they are not able to support themselves, and this may cause them to leave the area, which is a goal of Israel. By 1976, Israel had confiscated thousands of hectares of land from Palestinian people, and by 1987, the strict occupation over the West Bank and Gaza Strip led to Palestinian unrest, producing the first Intifada, which means uprising. Palestinians, armed with nothing but rocks, took on one of the strongest armies in the world. Their way of protesting was through civil disobedience, the closing of schools, and their refusal to pay taxes. One city that was a key movement in the Intifada was the city of Beit Sahur. This was the hometown of my parents. I had the opportunity to sit down with them and ask them what it was like to grow up during the Intifada. How old were you when the first Intifada began?
The first Intifada began, I was 15 years old.
What was that like? What differences happened during that time than before?
Well, people were fed up with the Israeli because they killed a lot of people. They arrested a lot of people. People were fed up with that and they started to say no, strike, closed stores. Then the Israeli military closed all the schools, all the colleges. We were out of school for a long time. Then we did our own schools, like everybody in his neighborhood.
Everyone was homeschooled?
It's not exactly homeschooled. It's like a collaborative between neighborhoods. Like if there was a teacher on the street, he would gather all the kids from the street and do it at his house and like that. And then we started growing our own produce and stuff because there were a lot of curfews and they wouldn't allow food to go in. We planted our food. We started baking our own bread and doing a lot of stuff like this.
Can you tell me about the story of your hand when they came to your school and you put your hand behind your friend's head?
Yes, they came to the school. They stopped us. We were a group of friends, boys and girls. And then one of the soldiers decided to push one of my friends to the wall. Luckily, I was standing there. It was a very sharp stone. I moved fast, put my hand between his head and the stone. Otherwise, he would have been probably dead, or at least he would have sustained a lot of, because my hand was almost crushed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me about your experience with the Israeli occupation, especially during the period of the Intifada.
I was almost about 13 years and still can remember how they were treated us as a kids. And one time I remember, like, when we were under the 45, when Beit Sahur went refused to pay taxes,
Are you talking about the 45-day siege of Israel over the city of Beit Sahur?
Yeah, that day, like, when they started to come over to every house and took the man who run his own business and refused to pay taxes, and they started to do this around the city, and many times they came asking for my dad, and he was like, run away, because if they got him, they will put him in jail. And I remember one time they come around, it was like 1 PM in the afternoon. Like me and my sister, she was older than me 2 years. They came to our house without knocking. They opened the door and come in with guns. And they put the gun on my older sister and they asked her, where is your dad? She told them, he's not here. No, tell us where he is or we will take you. She started to cry. And she told them, I don't know where he is. Then they pushed us and pushed the door of the house and left. And after that, like we started, like my dad came and he said they started to take everything from the home. So we have to move our couches, our TV, the valuable stuff that we have, because they will come and take it. And we started to put it to our neighbor, give them the couches, the dining room, the TV, the refrigerator, dryer, everything. And I remember, like, after 2 days we done this, they came to our house with a big truck down the street and they came into the house to take everything. But when they come to the house, when they came, they look around, they said, oh my god, you have nothing at this house. We have something to sit on the ground, we have no table. They were looking, where is the stuff is here? We told them we don't have anything and they don't believe us. They said to us, no, probably you put it somewhere else. We told them, no, that's what we have in our house. But of course, that was not the truth. We hide everything because they took from people, not from our home. They took everything from other people, like whatever they found. They will come and put it in a big truck and take it. And of course, nobody will cover all of these expenses. It's gone for us.
They wanted to take all of these items from the homes because you guys refused to pay the taxes, right?
Yeah, my dad refused to pay it. And I remember the time he was arguing with them. My dad told him, if you go to any school in Israeli district, even for the kindergarten, they will have many teachers. They will have a clinic at that school. They will have a heater. They will have condition, a good water, a good playground to play. It's for kindergarten. But go compare our schools, like high schools, Beit Sahur High School for girls and for boys. They have nothing compared to a kindergarten school. So why we have to pay taxes for we not get the equality between district? And like when that chief heard him saying that, he tell him, go away, I don't want to hear anything else from you, go away or I'll put you in jail. And they end it send up to put my dad in jail for more than 6 months without court, without nothing.
They put him in jail for 6 months.
Yeah, he and almost 40 people from Beit Sahur, like they refused to take it to pay the taxes. They put them in jail, some of them for 6 1 years. Because of this.
6 years or 6 months?
6 months, 1 year, 2 years.
Can you tell me about what happened with the Israeli IDs and why everyone was throwing them away?
During the Intifada, our town, Beit Sahur, decided not to pay taxes. The slogan was, I'm not going to pay for the bullet that's going to kill me or kill my kid. Because we pay taxes and we don't get nothing for it. We cannot vote, we don't get social security, we don't get nothing. We're not going to pay for the bullets. So we stopped paying taxes, everybody stopped paying taxes, and the Israelis went crazy. They came to the houses, they started taking furniture, and they started dismantling manufacturers' machines, whatever they can get. They put their hands on. They came to the houses. They took refrigerators. They took stoves. They took everything. They were inhumane. Even the security, the UN Security Council, tried to condemn Israel for doing this, but USA vetoed that just for Beit Sahur. And that's back in 1988. Then people got very upset. They said, okay, we don't want ID cards anymore, the Israeli ID cards anymore. They went to the city center, to the municipality, and they threw all the ID. Most of the people in Beit Sahur, went and threw their ID, and they said, we don't want your IDs, we don't recognize you as a state.
So then what did Israel do in response to you guys throwing the IDs back at them?
They did curfew. They put a siege on Beit Sahur. It was a 45-day siege. Nobody could leave. Nobody could come in. No food coming in. No supplies coming in.
So the Intifada was still going on during your senior year in high school. And I understand that a lot of the schooling was getting done within like neighborhood groups or at home because schools were closed. So how was this like to take your exams under these conditions and to graduate under these conditions?
We literally didn't have a senior year. I mean, we probably did 45 to 60 days out of the whole years. The exams, they ended up letting us take the exams, but honestly, the exams were a joke. It was just like everybody passed, because it's like really it wasn't a real exam. It was just to say that we graduated for some reason. But then when we went to college, that was a disaster because we struggled in college because of
you guys
we
had
missed
been,
yes
you've been out of school so long.
We were out of school, and a lot of the stuff it was we didn't study. A lot of the stuff we couldn't study because we only went to school for probably a month and a half out of the whole year, and what can you study?
What was your worst experience with an Israeli soldier?
There were a lot of bad experience with them. The worst experience was probably witnessing them killing this guy.
How old was he?
He was about 21. He was about 21.
How old were you both at the time?
I was about 17, 18, I think.
How old were you? He was 14.
She was 14. There was some stone throwing and some stuff going on, and they caught this guy. Three soldiers caught him, and they just, after they caught him, they just shot him, like right in front of everybody at their stairs, basically.
At your house? Him.
At
yes.
Our house, and we were at the house. I still remember my aunt, when she saw them, she started to cry because he was bleeding, and let him bleed on the ground.
They left him there.
To bleed to death?
And then after they left, and people took him to the hospital, but he didn't even make it to the hospital.
It was too late.
Died. He died on the spot, yeah. Wow. Another one was when they throw a stone. There was a checkpoint in the middle of the city on top of a big building. And this guy was walking home from work, and they threw a big stone on his head and killed him no reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was 18.
For nothing.
Yeah.
For nothing. He just.
Actually, that guy was never involved in anything.
And they just killed him.
Yeah, they just two soldiers. The story was, of course, nobody knows what went on up there, but the story was that the soldiers bet if he can hit him or not.
My parents' stories brought about a lot of light upon the mistreatment of Palestinians during the Intifada and even before the Intifada. During the Intifada, citizens' homes were often raided for everything they had. Curfews were imposed upon cities. They even went as far as stopping students from getting an education by preventing them from taking exams. Intifada lasted until 1993, when the Oslo Accords were signed. This raised hope for peace and granted Palestinians some autonomy in certain parts of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. However, it placed all of the blame of the wars on the shoulders of the Palestinian Authority and Palestinians signed to being a part of the State of Israel. Israel would then consider the West Bank and Gaza Strip as a single territory. However, Israel did not respect this claim and would continue to keep them separate. In 2000, Israel and Palestinians tried to negotiate at a Camp David summit, however, it ended without an agreement. In 2001, Israel begins to build a wall in the West Bank, which segregates Palestinians from each other and breaks up the West Bank. It contains many more checkpoints along the wall to restrict and control movement. The failure to reach a compromise at the Camp David summit and the building of a wall in the West Bank led to the Second Intifada in 2002. Over 3,000 Palestinians are killed, meanwhile 1,000 Israelis were killed, while Palestinians continued to fight with nothing but rocks and with what they had. Israel agreed to withdraw from the West Bank towns that they had reoccupied, and Israel agreed to release some of the 7,000 Palestinians they had arrested. In 2005, Israel withdrew from Gaza, and in 2006, Hamas won the general election in Gaza. After Hamas won, Israel launched a land, sea, and air blockade on Gaza, which is still active to this day. The entry of food, medical aid, and building materials is severely restricted. In 2012, attacks between Israel and Gaza grew as tension built, and in 2014, Israel launched attack on the Gaza Strip, known as the Gaza War. It was the biggest attack since 1967, and it was a 7-week war. Over 2,000 people from the Gaza Strip were killed, while less than 70 Israelis were killed. During the Gaza War in 2014, I was actually in Palestine at this time. I was in the West Bank visiting family. I was about 12 years old. And I just remember one night we were sitting outside and you could just hear these shots in the distance. And at first I thought they were fireworks. I didn't know they were shots. And every night, if you listened, you could hear shots after shots after shots. And it was terrifying to know that it was just a few hours away and that the life where you were at was just normal. And I remember another night, a missile actually hit the town of Beit Sahur where we were at. And I woke up in the middle of the night and it was the strangest thing ever. Like the whole earth shook, it felt like. And everyone just kind of got up and got outside and was like, what's happening? What is this? And the house that got hit was walking distance from my grandma's house. We walked there the next morning and I just remember the house was, it had a huge hole in it and people were trying to help clean. And I remember there was this truck across from the house and its windshield was just shattered and there was glass everywhere and a mess from the house everywhere. And thankfully, no one was killed. It was out of pure luck that no one was killed. But that experience, like, it's, there's no words to put it how I felt in those moments. I can't imagine living in that constant fear every day. In current news of Israel and Palestine, Israel to this day is still trying to fragment Palestinians. Their goal is to end any geographical link between Palestinian territories. Each territory has different IDs and license plate, and you aren't allowed into the other one without a permit from Israel. They also continue to illegally settle the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. There are over 137 illegal settlements and 100 outposts in the West Bank. In 2016 alone, over 1,000 Palestinian homes were destroyed. Residents were only given about 15 to 30 minutes to save their belongings. There's still a wall that stretches across the West Bank through the cities of Bethlehem and Jerusalem, separating the Palestinian people. They also still have to deal with checkpoints on every corner and mistreatment from Israeli soldiers. Even in today's world with the coronavirus, Palestinians were denied their basic human rights when Israel blocked shipments of the vaccine into Palestine. Israel quickly vaccinated its entire population and prevented the Palestinians from doing so. They just now opened up vaccination for Palestinian people after they have vaccinated all of their people. Thank you. this week, we dove into the complicated history of Israel and Palestine. And next week, we'll do the same, but for another topic. See you next week on Divided.